Thank you very much, Councillor Frawley, for that very warm introduction, and good afternoon, everybody. As somebody who grew up in Queensland, in fact, on the other side of Moreton Bay, down the Redlands area, it's always a great pleasure to be able to come back here. Councillor Frawley said, the topic of my talk today is 20 years of economic growth. Now, as you may know, the Australian economy has been growing for almost 20 years now. In fact, we just started our 20th year of economic growth. This has been a remarkable performance, and one that is unprecedented both in Australia's economic history and amongst other developed economies of the world over that period. And it raises a number of interesting questions. You know, why was Australia able to record such a good performance? Were we just lucky? Or were there good economic decisions that contributed to that? How was this growth distributed across the country? And what is the likelihood of this growth continuing? So there's some of the issues I want to talk about today. But before I do, it might be useful if I start with some facts and figures. So following the recession in the early 1990s, the Australian economy began to grow again in the September quarter 1991. And in the period since, the economy has grown in every quarter except three. There have been a couple of periods during that 20-year growth phase that when economic growth did slow noticeably, but at no time did year-end growth turn negative. The lowest the growth rate got to was 0.7%. That was in the year to the March quarter 2009, so just recently. The other slowdown was in 2000-2001, when the growth rate slowed to about 1.5%. Now, I should note that while growth remained positive throughout that period, both those slowdowns in economic activity did cause a noticeable rise in unemployment. The period since 1991 is the longest period of growth that Australia has recorded for at least the past century. The next longest period during which year-ended growth remained positive was the 13 years between 1961 and 1974. During the 70s and 80s, as you can remember, growth phases were usually pretty short. There was only typically about 7 or 8 years between recessions. As I mentioned, no other developed economy has experienced uninterrupted growth over the past 20 years. And in fact, many developed economies have had two episodes of negative growth during that period. One was in 2001, following the collapse of the dot-com bubble, and one was in 2008, following the collapse of the US subprime housing bubble. Now, even amongst the fast-growing emerging markets of the world, such an extended period of growth is pretty rare, as most of these countries were caught up in various financial crises that occurred over that period. So Australia's economic performance is pretty unusual, and I think it's worth spending some time thinking about how it was achieved. Part of the growth came, of course, from the fact that the population grew strongly over the period, particularly in recent years. Now, some people might also say that Australia was just lucky that we were well placed to take advantage of the growth of China, both in terms of our location and the composition of our exports. Now, I think these factors did play a role, but I think they're only a small part of the explanation. The China story has really only been significant over the past 5 years, and most of its significance still lies ahead of us. Remember too that the country that used to be our main export market, Japan, has experienced very subdued economic growth over that 20-year period. And some of our other very important trading partners in Asia experienced a very severe economic crisis in the 1990s. So I'd conclude that our luck has been somewhat mixed over that period, and we need to look at other factors to explain why we've been able to have such good economic growth. Now, I won't pretend to be able to provide a detailed analysis of these factors in the short time available here today, But I do want to highlight a couple of factors that I think have been very important. These are the increased flexibility of the Australian economy and the pursuit of prudent and disciplined economic policies. The Australian economy over the past 20 years has shown a greater degree of flexibility than was the case in the 1970s and 1980s. This made it much more resilient to the various external shocks that have been experienced over the period. You know, we've had the Asian crisis, the collapse of the dot-com bubble, and then the recent global financial crisis. One of the key elements in that flexibility has been the floating exchange rate. The Australian dollar has played an important counter-cyclical role by rising and falling in response to various external events that might otherwise have had the potential to destabilise the domestic economy. This was evident both during the Asian crisis and the dot-com bubble, for example, when the Australian dollar fell sharply in response to the worsening economic conditions abroad, and this helped to insulate the Australian economy from what was happening over there. Evidence of the role played by the exchange rate in stabilising the economy can also be seen in recent years. As you know, the Australian economy rose very strongly through 2006 through to 2008 as commodity prices rose, and this helped to dissipate some of the pressures that might otherwise have led to overheating in the economy. And conversely, the temporary but sharp fall in the exchange rate during the recent financial crisis helped cushion the economy on the downside. Given the consistent way in which the exchange rate has moved to insulate the economy from external shocks, I would have to conclude that the decision to float the exchange rate in 1983 was probably one of the most significant, if not the most significant, reform over the past 30 years. But other economic reforms have also played a role in helping the better performance of the economy. There have been a wide range of reforms to competition and industry policy. These have been implemented over many years, and they've seen the business sector become much more outward-looking and competitive. Labour market reforms have extended, some of which extended back to the 1980s, gave the labour market increased flexibility to respond to changing economic conditions without producing large swings in unemployment or unsustainable increases in wages. Various reforms of the financial system also gave it greater capacity to meet the financing needs of the economy, and they helped make Australia more attractive to foreign capital. In total, these reforms contributed to a substantial pickup in productivity in the 1990s. We estimate that during that decade, Australia was able to produce about 1.5% extra output a year simply by using existing labour and capital more effectively. Unfortunately, this growth in productivity appears to have slowed substantially in recent years. Now, perhaps this is a measurement problem because we've had very big shifts in the composition and the pricing of output, and this can make it quite difficult for the statistician to accurately measure what's happening. Some of the slowdown in productivity is also a reflection of the fact that the economy is now relatively fully employed. But it's also possible that the slowing in productivity growth is due to the fading effects of earlier economic reforms. Output growth has not slowed as much as productivity in recent years because businesses have been applying more capital and more labour to production. Business investment in recent years has risen to a very high level relative to GDP, one of the highest amongst the developed economies. Employment growth has also been very strong. Nonetheless, the slowdown in productivity growth has meant that GDP growth in the latest decade was not as fast as in the previous decade. Now let me turn to economic policies, because I think disciplined economic policies also contributed to the good economic performance over the past 20 years. They have prevented the build-up of imbalances that might otherwise have threatened the economy, as occurred frequently in the 1970s and 1980s. Government budget finances were greatly improved during this period. Budget surpluses were recorded in 10 of the past 19 years during that period. Government debt was reduced sharply, leaving Australia one of the best placed developed economies in terms of government finances in the world. Monetary policy has helped keep inflation low, providing a stable environment in which consumers and businesses have been able to plan and undertake their economic activity. Since inflation targeting began in 1993, inflation has averaged 2.7%, which is just a little above the midpoint of the target range. Now, economic growth is important because it allows living standards to rise and it allows more people to find work. The benefits that have flowed to Australians in this respect over the past couple of decades have been fairly impressive. Since June 1991, 3.5 million new jobs have been created, and income per household has risen in cumulative terms by about 30% in real terms. The increase in jobs, which represents a rise of about 2% a year on average, was faster than the growth of the population and was met partly by an increase in the proportion of the working age population that's actually in work, and partly by a decline in unemployment. Over the period, unemployment has declined from over 9% to a little over 5% at present. Now, one question of interest is how the benefits of this growth were distributed through the economy. Now, there are various ways we can look at this. One is across the states. Another way is across the income distribution. And a third way is across various industries. So let me start with a comparison of the states. And the key point that stands out when you look at the state data is that all the states shared in the growth over that period, although it is the case that Queensland and Western Australia grew faster than the others. Growth in production in Queensland averaged about 4.8% a year, in Western Australia 4.5%. In the other states, the average increase in production was between 2.8% and 3.7%. Now, population shifts explain most of this difference between the states, and if you worked out production on a per capita basis, the growth rate was much more uniform. All the states also experienced large falls in unemployment over those couple of decades. In fact, the states with the highest unemployment rates in 1991 generally experienced bigger falls over the period. At present, the unemployment rate is fairly uniform across the states, with the exception of Western Australia, where it's below average, and Tasmania, where it's above average. The benefits of growth were also widely spread across households at various points in the income distribution. Income relativities across the bulk of the population really didn't change much over that 20-year period, though the relative position of households in the top 10% of the distribution did rise relatively, and that of the lowest 10% did deteriorate a little bit. One area where there have been big differences in the growth performance has been across industries. So output of the mining industry, the financial services industry and personal services industries, or professional services industries, grew much faster than average over that period, while output in the manufacturing sector increased by much less than average. About three quarters of the economy now involves the production of services rather than goods. And the financial sector has replaced manufacturing as the largest single industry in the economy. While most people lament the small share of the manufacturing sector in the Australian economy, the low exposure to manufacturing may have been one of the reasons why the economy has fared relatively well over this period. It meant that Australia was less affected than many other countries by the global shift in manufacturing towards emerging markets, particularly the countries in Asia, that took place over that period. Let me turn now to the current state of the economy, and I'll say also a few words about the prospects for the next few years. Now, as you know, the Australian economy recovered relatively quickly from the slowdown that followed the global financial crisis. It's currently growing at around its trend rate, in part because of the increase in government spending. Consumer spending is still fairly restrained at the moment, even though consumer confidence is very high. It seems that households have become more cautious in their financial habits. They're saving more and borrowing less. The household saving rate has risen back to about 4% in the past year, whereas earlier this decade it was close to zero. Investment in new housing is also growing, but only at a relatively modest pace, despite the fact that the population is growing very quickly. This is because of the relatively high cost of housing. There's rigidities in the housing supply process, and there's difficulties for developers in obtaining finance. Business investment, however, is at a very high level. It did decline somewhat during the financial crisis, but it is expected to increase strongly again over the period ahead, driven importantly by the mining sector. Exports are also increasing at a solid pace at present, as earlier increases in mining capacity are coming on stream. Together with much higher export prices, this has meant that the trade account of the balance of payments has moved strongly back into surplus, which is quite an unusual situation for Australia. Employment is also growing strongly, in fact, more strongly than would normally be associated with the rise in output that we've had recently. And the unemployment rate has fallen significantly since mid-2009 to about 5.25% at present. Now, as I mentioned earlier, over the past couple of decades, the typical pattern had been for growth in the resource-rich states of Queensland and Western Australia to be faster than the average of the other states. But currently, that's not the case. And as I'm sure you're aware, Queensland at the moment is lagging the other states. It's got relatively weak growth in retail sales and consumption, and it has particularly weak business investment. Over the past year, Queensland has experienced little growth in final demand, whereas in the rest of Australia, demand is growing by around 6% in real terms, which is around the highs it ever gets to. Part of the problem is that in Queensland it seems that it's suffering from an overhang in the property market after the exuberance in the lead-up to the financial crisis. Apartment building outside Brisbane is especially weak, and so is commercial building. And of course, the high exchange rate is affecting tourism quite severely in Queensland, because Australians are taking advantage of cheaper overseas holidays. Our expectation is that economic growth in Australia will continue for at least the next couple of years. This is a period over which the bank normally forecasts. Our latest forecasts were published earlier this month when we put out our quarterly statement on monetary policy, and those forecasts show the growth of the Australian economy will continue at a solid pace over the next couple of years. This view is partly based on the expectation that the world economy will continue its expansion that began in 2009. World economic growth is estimated at about 4.5% this year, which is above average. So in other words, this is quite a good, healthy outcome. Growth in our major trading partners, which is a group more heavily weighted towards the fast-growing economies in Asia, is expected to be even stronger this year. Despite the good performance of the past year, there's been considerable discussion in recent months about whether the global economy can continue to grow solidly in the face of financial problems that it has been experiencing, particularly the overhang of government debt in a lot of the developed economies of the world. However, while the official forecasters around the world, such as the International Monetary Fund and the OECD and a lot of private forecasters, they all acknowledge that this is a potential risk to growth, but nonetheless, they're all forecasting that the global economy will grow at a reasonable pace over the next couple of years. And this is the Reserve Bank's view as well. The strong growth of the global economy recently has also again pushed up the prices of many of the commodities that Australia produces. And they've returned to the high peaks reached before the onset of the global financial crisis in 2008. Relative to the prices of our imports, export prices are at their highest level for 60 years. This is generating a lot of income for the country. We're forecasting that Australia's total income in nominal terms this year will rise by about 10%, which is a very strong figure. We expect that export prices will ease back somewhat over the next couple of years as more supply comes on stream and as economic growth in our major trading partners slows down to a more sustainable rate. But nonetheless, by historical standards, I think prices are going to stay pretty high. Now, this creates a very favourable environment for the Australian economy. Household income will most likely rise at quite a solid rate, and this in turn will underpin consumption, even if households maintain their recent higher rate of saving. Most importantly, however, we think that economic growth will be driven by strong business investment. This will be concentrated in the mining and gas industries, including some very large projects which are planned here for Queensland. Mining investment typically runs at about 1.75% of GDP, and in past mining booms it's typically risen to about 3% in GDP, so it roughly doubles during a boom. In the current boom, it's already risen to 4.25%, and even on conservative assumptions, it's expected to rise significantly further over the period ahead. And this is going to provide a major impetus to growth to Australia. Even outside mining, investment is likely to rise given that capacity constraints exist in many parts of the economy. This expansion in business investment is expected to outweigh the planned scaling back in government spending. In this environment, we see further growth in employment, probably continuing to run ahead of growth in the labour force, so that unemployment will continue to trend downwards. One issue is whether the strength of the economy will have implications for inflation. At present, underlying inflation has fallen back into the top half of the target range after rising noticeably over the second half of 2007 and into 2008. We expect that it's going to stay at around its current level for the next year or so, but after that, upward pressure on inflation is again likely to emerge if the economy continues to grow strongly as expected. History tells us that inflation can be a problem during resource booms, and while there are reasons for believing that this time around will be less of a problem than in the past, I think we need to remain alert to the risks. While Australia will most likely continue to do well over the next few years, I think it would be a mistake to assume that the economic cycle has been eliminated. We also need to recognise that it is actually very difficult to foresee what's going to happen in the future, and that there are risks to the path of the economy. It's possible, for example, that growth in the world economy will lose momentum, as some people are saying, creating a significantly less favourable environment for Australia than is currently assumed. If that happened, both the volume and the price of our exports would be weaker than we're currently thinking, and external financing for the country might also be more difficult. On the other hand, it could turn out that inflationary pressures build more quickly than is assumed. So let me conclude. Australia has delivered a very good growth performance over the past couple of decades. That was the benefit that flowed from a long process of economic reform and the adoption of prudent and disciplined economic policies. Even though there was significant variation in growth across industries, the benefits of that growth were spread relatively widely across the states and across the income distribution of the population. I think it's reasonable to expect that further growth lies ahead. However, with the economy now operating close to capacity, it will take a further improvement in productivity and disciplined policies for this growth to be sustained. Thank you very much.
Hi Rick, Lisa Martin from Australian Associated Press. Whoever wins the next election, what are the three major challenges facing the next Treasurer and what skills do they need for the job?
Well, it's not my position to talk about the skills the Treasurer needs, but the main challenges that we're going to face here is the fact that we've had 20 years of economic growth, so we have an economy that's relatively fully employed, and we're facing a very strong demand for our resources from our trading partners, particularly China and increasingly from India. So they're the issues we're going to have to deal with, because an economy in that situation, there's a lot of benefits come from it, but there's also pressures built in the economy because, you know, industries are operating at capacity. They find it harder to get workers, find it harder to get materials and goods, and this can lead to inflationary problems. So they're really the main economic issue we face, I think.
Yes, we've got a question.
Thanks, Ray. Yeah, Peter House and Dentist. Thanks, Ray. Rick, for your talk. It's very interesting. One overriding concern, though, is the recent talk lately of population control of some sort and restricting immigration and having a sustainable Australia and all this sort of thing. Can you give us your opinion on population as a growth factor within that economy you've described?
Well, the growth of the population is a very difficult issue, and it's one that you know, governments have to deal with. There's various aspects to it. Obviously, you know, businesses at the moment need more workers, so they're wanting workers, more workers, more immigration. But on the other hand, more people create pressures in different areas, and they're the sort of issues that governments around the country have to deal with and have to come to a decision on how they're going to handle those pressures.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. My question is in regards to the National Broadband Network, a major infrastructure project that's on the horizon for Australia. Considering your comments just earlier about the possible, I'm going to paraphrase you, a skills shortage, do you see a big effect of the NBN if it was rolled out, and what effect would that be?
Oh, look, I'm not really in a position to comment on individual projects like that. I think there's I'm not aware of the exact requirements of that project, so I don't think I could offer any useful comment on that. Sorry.
Richard Cutter from THG. Rick, you mentioned that you expect the inflation rate to stay within your target range for the next 12 months. Does that mean that the RBA won't be increasing rates for the next 12 months? And also, if the major banks do increase their rates, will the RBA consider lowering the rates, the target rate?
Well, in making decisions about interest rates, the bank takes account a lot of factors, and but also it's forward-looking in the way it considers these issues, because it takes time for monetary policy to work, so we have to always look ahead, you know, a year or two, and make decisions about how we think the economy is going to be at that time. At the moment interest rates are at about average levels. We're very pleased to be there. There's some uncertainty in the world economy at the moment, following on from the difficulties in some of the European economies in particular, following the concerns about government debt problems in Greece. So, there's a lot of issues going on. The US economy is probably losing some momentum at the moment from everything we can see. But, there's a whole range of issues that have to be taken into account. So what will happen to interest rates is not at all clear.
Anyone else want to indicate they'd like to ask a question? We've got one down the back. Yes, we've got a couple more. That's fine. Go ahead down the back.
Kerry Sinclair from the Courier Mail newspaper. Some analysts are saying that the very weak US jobless claims figures released overnight raises the possibility of a double dip recession. Is it important that Turbotech's government tomorrow remains open to further stimulus down the track?
Well, I think, people talk about double-dip recessions, but double-dip recessions are very rare. And, in the past year, the US economy has grown at a reasonable pace. At the moment, as I said, some of the recent indicators have been a little bit more mixed. It's still growing, but not as fast as it was recently. So I think it's, I still think it's premature to be talking about double-dip recessions.
Yeah, Peter Houston again, right? Rick, if the Australian dollar stays up in the 90s, how will that affect exports and how will it affect the economy overall?
Well, the you know, as I said, we've seen some of the impact, I think, in the tourism industry in particular. We have been, you know, surprised in other respects how resilient the economy has been to the exchange rate in the manufacturing sector. Like, if you look at manufacturing exports, more generally exports of services, they've held up pretty well, even at this exchange rate. And I think businesses, as I said, they've become very efficient, and you know, they're quite good at adapting to changes in the exchange rate and the competitive environment. So, you know, the exchange rate is at a relatively high level. Given everything that's happening in the economy, I think it's a reasonable level. But within that, there's obviously going to be some industries who find it harder going at this exchange rate.